year 1400. By Shire reckoning. Bag End, Bagshot Row, Hobbiton, West Farthing. The Shire. Middle Earth. Concerning hobbits. Hobbits have been living and farming in the four farthings of the Shire for many hundreds of years, quite content to ignore and be ignored by the world of the big folk. Middle-earth being, after all, full of strange creatures beyond count. Hobbits must seem of little importance, being neither renowned as great warriors, nor counted among the very wise.
Frodo, someone at the door.
In fact, it has been remarked by some that hobbits' only real passion is for food. A rather unfair observation, as we have also developed a keen interest in the brewing of ales and the smoking of pipeweed. But where our hearts truly lie is in peace and quiet and good tilled earth. For all hobbits share a love of things that grow. And yes, no doubt to others our ways seem quaint. But today of all days, it is brought home to me. It is no bad thing to celebrate a simple life.
Frodo, the door! Sticklebats, where is that boy?
All right, we are starting a new series today, and we are talking about introductions, both an introduction to the book, as well as an introduction possibly to someone that you've not met before. And I have always enjoyed the way Tolkien introduced Lord of the Rings. He was about to write this novel that was going to go on for three long books and take all kinds of adventures, and he starts with this section concerning hobbits. And for a long time, it puzzled me, like, why start there? With all the places he's going to go, all the adventures they're going to go on, why start with this section concerning hobbits? And as I've thought about it, I think the reason he did it, and I'm no scholar of Tolkien, but I think one of the reasons he did it was because when you read fantasy traditionally, as you look through different fantasy novels, usually your protagonist, the hero of your story, is someone like the ranger, the one who's living in the wilderness, who has great swordplay skills and great skills with the bow and arrow and has fought in many wars and is just this heroic character. Or the elf prince, the one who grew up in an affluent society where he had everything but leaves it to go on some noble adventure. Or your dwarf king with his mounds and mounds of gold to protect, and the invading armies are coming, and he defends his gold against the invaders. And in Tolkien's novel, he was going to have all of those characters. They're all in there. And it is still a great fantasy novel going on all these different adventures, but I think he put this section concerning hobbits up front because he wanted to make it clear this is not their story. This is a tale of a simple, peace-loving hobbit. And he goes on to tell this spectacular story with all this adventure that at its core is a single, peace-loving hobbit and his best friend, trying to destroy evil in the world. And I'm not going to spoil the end for you. Go read it. It's worth it. If you don't want to read it, watch the movies, but watch the extended editions. They're way better. But he is introducing the hero of his story, who is a non-traditional hero. John's going to do some of that for us this morning. So just by background, a little preview into the book of John, the author is John. Yes, very good. They named it after the guy who wrote it. The interesting thing is, he didn't. He does not refer to himself by name in the book. He refers to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved. And early on in church history, that led to some debate as to which John wrote the Gospel of John. But over the years, it has come to be pretty much a general consensus that this is John, the son of Zebedee, the one who followed Jesus through his many adventures, through his many days on this planet, from the time he started his ministry up to his death and resurrection. One of the biggest signs of that is actually the firsthand nature of it, that he is describing it as someone who was actually there, not someone who became a disciple later and a follower of Jesus. Especially in the second half of the book, when he gets to this story of the Last Supper, the last Passover that Jesus spends with his disciples, it seems like an incredibly intimate description, as if someone was sitting there at the table, not someone who was removed. And a lot of times when we read in Scripture, we want to know why a book was written. As we look at epistles, oftentimes Paul, or whoever the writer, Peter, will tell us right at the front end of the epistle, here is why I'm writing you, here is why I am writing this book. John doesn't do that. He actually waits all the way till chapter 20 to tell us why he has written the book. But when he does, he makes it very clear. He says this in chapter 20. He says something in chapter 20, verse, I'll tell you about it here in a second. I love it. When they all start scurrying, it's great. There we go. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So John tells us when he gets to chapter 20, here is why I have written everything that comes before this. So it's good to have this in mind as we're going into it, that his purpose is to tell you that Jesus, or to tell his reader who would have been living in the same time that Jesus walked the earth, he said, I want to tell you that this Jesus guy, he's the Messiah. He's the Son of God. And that if you believe in him, you can have life. That's the reason he's writing this book. And John tends to have a unique style, likely because he was younger than everyone else who was writing Gospels. He was likely the youngest of the apostles that walked with Jesus. He has a very familiar style. In fact, it's like he's just your friend trying to tell you a story. Like, so he'll start telling the story over here, and he'll be telling the story, and here's what Jesus did, and here's what Jesus said, and here's what the Pharisees did. Oh, wait, I forgot. I got to tell you this piece before I can tell you that piece, so I got to come back here and tell you this. Now I can tell you the rest of my story. Like, he tells the story as if he is just telling you a story, sitting at a table, sharing a nice glass of Kool-Aid together as you tell stories of things that have happened in your life. That's what the Apostle John, that's how he tells his story. And he actually tells it in two halves. He's got the first half, which is everything from the beginning of Christ's ministry all the way up until like the last 48 hours of his life. So the first half of the book takes place over the course of about 3.5 years. The second half of the book takes place in like the last 3.5 days, depending on how you read it, 3.5 weeks. But very short period of time is the second half of the book. The first half is everything that came before that. And he's really trying to do this in two parts. One, he is showing you everything that Jesus did that showed you that he was the Messiah. And then at the end, he spends a lot of time specifically around the Passover that they shared together, showing Jesus' last words, the things that were most important on his mind, the things that Jesus wanted to communicate in the last days of his life. So we're going to see that as we go through. But today, we're doing introductions. And because I felt like just making it entirely a literary day, we are going to play a literary game. All right? So I want to talk about first lines in novels. See, there are novels throughout time that have had iconic first lines. Any literary buffs, people who really like to read, especially like read old books? Okay. This is your game. This is what you've been preparing for your whole life, okay? Because I am going to give you the first part of the line. I want you to tell me the second part of the line and the title of the book, all right? Hopefully some of these will be really easy and some of them will be very hard. Let's start with an easy one. It was the best of times. You don't have to give me the whole rest of it, just the next phrase. It was the worst of times. Absolutely. What novel is that? Tale of Two Cities. You got it. It is the best of times, the worst of times. Charles Dickens, Tale of Two Cities. I tried to start with an easy one. All right, now I'm going to go to a favorite. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking. No one? Oh, this is one of my favorite. Very close. Very, very close. 13. 1984, it was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. I think Orwell did this on purpose. I'm going to gush for just a second. Because he's trying to make you uncomfortable with his very first line. He's telling you something is not right. And I think he wanted 13 because 13 is a number that makes people uncomfortable. So from his very first line, he's telling you something is terribly wrong. Anyway, moving on. It's one of my favorite novels of all time. Anyway, call me Ishmael, yes, from the book Moby Dick. Yes, call me Ishmael from Moby Dick, one of the most famous first lines ever, probably second only to Tale of Two Cities. And possibly this next one. This next one, I'm hoping that all of you know. In the beginning. What's the next word? Oh, see, you all read ahead. I'm so happy you did your homework. See, yes, you are right. This is the first line of the book of John. 1 through 18 is what we're looking at today, and in the beginning was the Word. But if you were a young man or a young woman growing up in Israel at the time of John, that would not have been your thought, right? Because you wouldn't have read the Gospel of John yet. So if you put yourself in their shoes, what do you think the next word was going to be? God. Right? John is deliberately drawing a parallel here back to the beginning of the Bible, back to the beginning of Genesis, where the Moses, the writer of Genesis, starts with, in the beginning, God. I believe John here is trying to draw this parallel on purpose. He wanted them to trip up. He wanted them to make the mistake I was trying to make you make, right? To say, in the beginning, God. And then he tricks them and says, in the beginning, was the Word. And they're like, what? Wait, that's not what comes next. What comes next is God. So what is this Word? What is this Word that John's talking about? Because he's deliberately trying to make this connection to God. So is the Word another name for God? Is the Word like something that God created? Where is this coming from? And John starts instantly answering this question because he says this word that he's talking about that was in the beginning, this word was with God. So now your Jewish reader in the time would be saying, okay, so it's the word. It was with God in the beginning. But I thought Genesis taught that God was alone at the beginning, and then he started creating. So this word was with God. Again, what does this mean? And John says the word was God. And now your reader has that moment of relief. I get it. Okay, so this word, he's just talking about God. This word that was in the beginning with God was just God. Okay, I can deal with that. Verse 2 says, he was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. And again, your Jewish reader, at the beginning of the millennium, is thinking, wait, is this God? Or is this something that was with God? What is this word that John is talking about? Because now he's saying that this word that was with God created everything. But we know that God was the one who created everything, and now I'm confused, right? This doesn't make sense. What is this word that John is talking about? He says, without him, not anything was made, and it was made for him and through him. And in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And a light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So we know that this word was in the beginning with God. We know that this word was God. We know that, like what we learned in Genesis, everything that was created by God, and apparently now this word, and now this word is life and light. And it's a light that comes into the darkness and shines, and the darkness has not overcome it. Think about it this way. If we were to cover these windows, and we were to turn out all the lights, and we were to make it incredibly pitch black in this room, you could not see your hand in front of your face. Dark, dark, dark. And then we went to the middle of the room, and we lit a match. The light from that match would shine out, and anywhere that the light went, there would be no darkness. Because where the light is, darkness cannot exist at the same time. What John is saying here in his introduction is this word that he's talking about, it does that in the darkness in our lives. This word, whatever this word is also like this light that brings life. Wherever it is, wherever it enters in, darkness cannot exist. And even though the darkness has tried to overcome it, the darkness has tried to defeat it. It has failed time and time again. It says there was a man sent from God. His name was John. This is not John the author that he's referring to here. This would be John the baptizer. We traditionally call him John the Baptist. But he came baptizing people, John the baptizer. He says, and he was a witness. And he was going to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. What he's saying is this light that has come into the world, this guy John started telling people about. He went about all through the life, and most of the people who are reading would have known this John the Baptizer. They'd be like, oh yeah, I know that guy. I remember that guy. He was really weird. Like, he wore camel skins and like just ate whole honeycombs and like locusts, like grasshoppers. Like, that was his whole diet. It was weird. I remember him. I remember some of the stuff that he talked about, and John saying what he was talking about was this word, was this light that had come to you. And he came and he bore witness. He told people about this light. But he was not the light. He only came to bear witness about the light. See, some people had already gotten it confused at this period in time. They were thinking that the word, the light that John's talking about was John the Baptist himself. And he's like, no, no, no. He only came to tell you about the light. He himself was not the light. The light, the word, was something else. It is not the same thing. It says, the true light, which gives light to everyone, he was coming into the world. In fact, he was in the world. And the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. So he's saying, this word, this light, that was God, that was with God, that came to this earth to give light, to dispel the darkness, to kick out the darkness, to say, you have no authority here any longer. This light, John came to tell people, he was here. He was in the world. The world that he created, he had come into, he had entered. This light had come into the world, and even though he created it, the world didn't recognize him. The world didn't see it for what it was. They were blinded to it. Even though John was telling them, here it is, here's the light, here's the word, they couldn't see it. They didn't know who it was. They missed it. In fact, he said he came to his own people. The people that looked like him, the people who talked like him, the people who were supposed to be living like little lights, the people who were supposed to be bringing light into the world, the people who were supposed to be dispelling the darkness in the world, those are the people that he came to. And even they rejected him. He said they didn't see him for who he was. They didn't realize he was the light. They didn't realize he was the word. They rejected him, even though they should have, more than anybody else in history, they should have been the ones to see him for who he was, because he walked like them, he talked like them. They were supposed to be patterning their entire life to look like him. They still missed it. They still rejected him. Even though this light, this word, came to his own people did not receive him. says, but to all who did receive him, for everyone who did see the light for what the light was, the word for what the word was, those who believed in his name, those who placed their trust in him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. He says, to those who recognized who he was, even if they weren't of the people that he first came to, anyone, all, everyone who did receive him, who recognized him as this word that was with God, the word that was God, the light that created all things, that brought life and dispelled darkness, those who saw him for what he was, to them he gave the right to be born a second time, to become a child of God. Not from blood, not from flesh, not from the will of man, not from these things that were tainted by sin. See, from the beginning, sin had entered the world. And these things, flesh, the will of man, blood, these things were all tainted by sin. And what he's saying is those who put their faith in Jesus, that's the next verse. Those who put their faith in the word, this light that nobody knows what it is because I didn't just say it a second ago, these people who have no idea where this is going, if they put faith in that thing, they had the right to be born of a different source, from God, who is not tainted, from this light that was not tainted, from this light that dispels darkness and cleans the disgusting sin out of their lives. He said, but the word became flesh. This word, this light that existed in with God, that created everything, it became flesh. And it dwelt among us. It lived with its creation. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son of the Father, full of grace and truth. It says, John bore witness about him and cried out, was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me. He's saying, this word that I'm telling you about, who was with God, who was God, who created all things, that dispels darkness, he actually came into this world. He put on flesh. He walked and talked like you and me. I got a chance to walk with him. This is John's storyteller starting to come out, saying, I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. I walked with him. I talked with him. I ate with him. I drank with him. And I saw him in his glory. I saw him do things that will blow your ever-loving mind. And at the same time, while I'm sitting here watching him do things that blew my mind, that should have actually terrified me. Because think about it, if this guy can give sight, he has the power to take it away. If this guy can help people walk, he has the power to take it away. This should have terrified me, the power that this light taken on flesh was able to do. Like a hobbit seeing Gandalf for the first time, it should have instilled fear deep in my soul. But after walking with him, talking with him, eating with him, drinking with him, what I learned about him is this: he was full of grace and truth. He was someone who was wise and brought truth, but every time he brought it with grace and gentleness and care. And he said, and that's the one that John was talking about. He said, for from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And this is where John lands his plane on his introduction. Letting people know this word who was in the beginning with God, this word that is one and the same as God, this word that created all things, this light that came in to dispel the darkness, this light that took on flesh, that I walked with, I talked with, I drank with, I ate with him, and I watched him as he distributed truth and grace everywhere he went. This guy is Jesus. And at this point, the reader in the New Testament, the person who was reading this as John was putting it out, publishing it for the first time, would have been like, wait, Jesus? All these things, you're talking about Jesus? I remember him. I saw him. I heard the things that he did. That Jesus is the same word that you've been talking about this whole time? That is amazing. Because I had heard that he died. I had heard that he was no longer with us. And you're telling me that this whole time he was God. And John is now going to embark on telling the story of Jesus' life, of telling these amazing things that he did, of telling of the truth that he shared, the truth that he taught, the grace that he extended time and time again to people, culminating in, yes, these are all the things we saw in his life that showed us that he is God. And culminating at the end with, and here's how he proved it once and for all. They nailed him to a tree, and he rose again from the dead. This is the story John is setting up. This is the story that John is going to tell. And through it all, he wants us to know that even though that Moses set up the law in the Old Testament, and the Jews had been following that law for generations, and they had thought that the law was the main point of the story. The law was the ranger. The law was the elvish prince. The law was the dwarven king. He's like, no. The law has never been the point of the story. This is the point of the story. When God wanted us to know who he was and what the main point of the story was, he sent Jesus. Because no one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He, meaning Jesus, has made him known. Up until this point, you thought you knew God because you knew the law. Up until now, you thought you knew God because you knew the rules to follow. Up until now, you thought you knew God because this is what God had been presented to you as, and he said, you missed it all. It's not about them, it's about the hobbits. It's not about the law, it's not about the rules, it's not about that. It's about knowing who God is. And the way that you know who God is through the person of Jesus Christ, who has made God known to you, who is truth and grace, who dispels darkness everywhere he goes, who is so powerful that he can create all things and exist in time, all past, all future. That same God is the God who lived with us and did all the things that John's about to say, culminating, showing truth and grace. So what? John's main point in his introduction and through the rest of the book is this. Jesus is God. Not a prophet sent by God, not a man who talked about God. Jesus is the Word who is at the beginning, who exists now, and who will exist forever. Jesus is God. And as such, when he lives with us and shows us his truth and his grace, when he meets us where we are, rather than expecting us to clean up our lives first to come to him, when he does all the miraculous things that Jesus does, he does them to show us who God is, because he wants us to see him. So what? What's the point of this? I think John shows us a few things here, but it will flesh out as we continue on through the book. But Jesus fulfilled prophecy. Jesus was the one who existed from the beginning, who was with Israel through all of everything from Moses to Joshua to the judges to the kings, and he was there when all the prophecies were made, and then he fulfilled them when he came. So as a result, Jesus can be trusted. Jesus is God, John's main point. And if he's God, any Jewish reader would have known instantaneously what that means is that he is to be obeyed. Because when God speaks to the nation of Israel, they have but one option, which is to obey. And finally, Jesus is full of grace. This is the piece that would have been new. That Jesus is coming to show us God and the fact that he is full of grace, that he is willing to meet us where we are, and he is here to help. He is here to not meet us where we are and let us sit there and writhe in our filth. But rather, he's there to meet us where we are and help us out of it, to help us to grow, to help us to change, to help us to be more like the light that dispels darkness. And we're going to see that time and time again in this book. But today, if you have never met this Jesus and you want to know more, please come talk to me. Stick around for our Pastor of the Pastor time. Ask any questions you have there. Talk to a service leader, Scott, Pat, Audrey, or really anyone in our church would be happy to tell you about this Jesus. This Jesus who has had a profound impact on their life. Because this Jesus who shows us with God what God is chose to live just like us, with us, because he loves us and he loves you. Let's pray. God, I thank you for how overwhelmingly awesome you are. Father, I pray that we will never lose sight of that, but that we will also never lose sight of the fact that you love us so much, that even though you are so much more awesome and deserving of respect and worship, you still came to be with us because you want us to be with you. Father, I pray that if there's anyone here today who has not done that yet, who has not said, yeah, that sounds great, I want that, that today could be their day. For those of us who have made that decision, Father, bring back to our memory just how truly incredible it is that you would make that offer for us. And as we go into worship, Father, as we continue in worship, I pray that our singing will reflect the joy that we have because of what you have done for us in your Son's name.